Voices for Justice is a podcast that uses adult language and discusses sensitive and potentially triggering topics, including violence, abuse, and murder. This podcast may not be appropriate for younger audiences. All parties are innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Some names have been changed or omitted per their request or for safety purposes. Listener discretion is advised.
My name is Sarah Turney, and this is Voices for Justice. Today I'm discussing the case of Morgan Nick. In 1995, the city of Alma, Arkansas was that city you always hear about in true crime. Very small, only a couple thousand people. But you could find a few hundred of them packing the bleachers and filling the standing room at the local Little League game on any given night. On summer nights, packs of kids would run around together catching fireflies. This was a community who probably wasn't perfect. I mean, no community is. But they felt safe. Safe enough to allow their kids the freedom to play a few hundred yards away from their parents without fear. But like the story goes, that all changed in 1995, when 6-year-old Morgan Nick disappeared after being out of her mother's sight for just a few minutes. Her case would quickly become infamous. Arkansas would later adopt the Amber Alert system and name it after Morgan. Although Morgan has helped set that precedent in Arkansas, she still needs our help. She still needs us to share. And so does her family. This is the case of Morgan Nick.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all. But it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
There's a new class of blockbuster drugs. Drugs like Ozempic. They're changing bodies.
And all of a sudden, just the weight starts falling off.
Fortunes.
It just got too expensive.
They're just bank breakers.
And industries.
There was a lot of excitement. There was a lot of skepticism.
The impact of these drugs from business to health is just beginning.
From the Journal, Trillion Dollar Shot. Find it in the Journal feed wherever you get your podcasts.
It feels like we're all being told to go on this diet, take that supplement. Ozempic will give you depression, but you know what'll cure that? Weed. Or you could try to balance your hormones. At Science Versus, we're like,
what the f*** is going on?
Forget the crap online and listen to Science Versus. Just the facts. Oh, and a bunch of stupid jokes.
What is a ghost's favorite fruit? Booberries.
That's Science VS. New season out on Spotify soon.
In 1995, Morgan was going through a bit of a transition in her life. Her parents, Colleen and John, had recently divorced. By all accounts, it was a very amicable split. I'm sure that still wasn't easy for Morgan. But by all accounts, she was thriving, and thriving with sass and style. You know, when I research these cases, it can be really hard to understand what these people were really like. To tell you about them in a meaningful way. In a way that I hope gets you to care enough to participate in our calls to action. But that is not the case here. When Colleen talks about Morgan, she just gushes about her. And I can see why. At just 6 years old, Morgan is a little spitfire. She thinks bubblegum is a food group. And she quit the track team after just one practice. After filling out all the paperwork and making sure she had all the right clothes and shoes to participate, Morgan tells her mom that no one told her that track involved running outside, out in the heat where she would sweat. So she quits the track team and signs up for Girl Scouts, telling Colleen that this way she can just sit inside and glue stuff, which is much more Morgan style. And it doesn't really seem like Colleen cares that much as long as Morgan is doing something she enjoys. Like I said, the divorce was pretty recent, within the last year, and I'm sure Colleen was still adjusting to everything herself. So when Colleen is invited by friends of hers to come watch their kids play in a Little League baseball game on Friday night, June 9th, 1995, she thought it would be a great way to get out of the house and get her mind off things. Colleen worked hard to keep her household functioning with three kids. She had 6-year-old Morgan, 4-year-old Logan, and 22-month-old Taryn. In order to spend more time with her kids, and I have to imagine negate some of the costs of childcare for 3 children, Colleen started a licensed daycare out of her house in Ozark, Arkansas. This was and still is a really small town. Now, Ozark is about 30 minutes away from the game in Alma, and she'd never been there before, so she wanted to leave the house early to make sure she wouldn't be late to the game. She gives her kids baths and makes their favorite meal for dinner, grilled cheese sandwiches. Now, there'd actually been a lot of rain lately, so this was a makeup game that started later than usual, 9 p.m. That night, Colleen leaves her 2 younger children with their grandmother and opts to just take Morgan to the game. Morgan asks for another grilled cheese sandwich before they go, but Colleen knows that Morgan isn't a big eater and likely won't even finish it. So she tells Morgan no, they gotta get to the game. So Morgan throws on her new green Girl Scout shirt and they go to the game. When Colleen and Morgan make it to Alma, they park in this kind of makeshift parking area on a hill near the field. Then they find their way to their seats on the bleachers next to Colleen's friends. During the game, 2 kids keep asking Morgan if she wants to play. But Morgan is very shy and opts to stay with her mom instead. Colleen says that Morgan spent most of the game just trying to untie Colleen's shoes, where Colleen would act surprised, like, oh my gosh, how did these get untied again? Much to Morgan's delight. But Morgan is 6, and while this does entertain her for much of the game, just as it's wrapping up around 10:15 p.m., the 2 kids ask Morgan to play again. They specifically ask if she wants to go catch fireflies with them. And to Colleen's surprise, Morgan actually wants to go. But Colleen isn't so sure. Even in the 90s, in these cities that felt so safe, Colleen was very protective of her kids. She walked them to and from the bus stop each day, while other parents consider her to be a helicopter mom. So as Colleen resists letting Morgan go, this criticism kind of plays in her head. And her friends also encourage her to let Morgan go play, reminding her of how safe the area is. Plus, this area was not huge. It was a baseball field with a double gate and 2 small parking areas you can see from the bleachers. There were no bathrooms, no concession stand. The kids wouldn't be playing far. And the game was almost over. Morgan would be away from her, but still within her sight for maybe 15 minutes. So Colleen says yes. And she says Morgan was so excited. She threw her arms around her mom and gave her a big kiss on the cheek. Then Colleen watches as Morgan walks down the bleachers and runs to the parking area with the 2 other kids. Colleen has her eyes on Morgan for a few minutes, and then starts watching the game again until it ends just a few minutes later around 10:30 p.m. But in just those few minutes that Colleen took her eyes off Morgan, she was gone.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
It's just after 10:30 p.m. on Friday, June 9th, 1995. After attending a Little League game with friends, Colleen Nick can't find her 6-year-old daughter Morgan anywhere. After going to catch fireflies with 2 other kids, they come back without Morgan when the game ends. The kids, 10-year-old Ty and 8-year-old Jessica, tell Colleen that Morgan sat down next to Colleen's car on the hill to dump sand out of her shoes. Now, Ty actually stayed behind for a second to see if Morgan was going to come back with them, but he figured she was just going to stay at her mom's car instead of going back to her on the bleachers. So, of course, Colleen and her friends stay behind to help search for Morgan, as they see dozens of cars and hundreds of people leave the scene. At 11:07 p.m., Morgan is officially reported missing to the Alma Police Department, which is conveniently actually really close to the field. Police are there in minutes. Now, at first, police assume that Morgan was probably just hiding somewhere, or maybe a parent or grandparent picked her up by mistake. We know that these things happen. So, officers go to the ball field, assess the situation, and realize pretty quickly that it's probably more serious than they anticipated. The Alma PD admits that the search for Morgan that night was pretty disorganized, It was basically just a bunch of officers and everyone left at the baseball field walking around the area looking for Morgan. Now, the police department does bring in extra lights to help search the nearby fields, but it was really just a lot of people screaming Morgan's name looking in any direction they could think of. But to the Alma PD's credit, they do secure the scene that night. They also pick up anything they think they might be able to recover DNA from. Cigarette butts, cans, anything. And they get to work talking to people still at the scene. Of course, they really want to talk to the two kids that were playing with Morgan. The kids tell the police what I've already told you. They last saw Morgan dumping the sand from her shoes near her mom's car. But then, they tell the police something that will be the cornerstone of this investigation for decades. The kids saw a man near Colleen's car where they were playing. They describe him as white, tall, with a scruffy beard. He was also wearing shorts and had a hairy stomach and chest. So it seems that at some point he may have had his shirt off or, like, lifted it up or something. They also tell the police that the man was sitting in a red truck smoking a cigarette. And it wasn't just a normal red truck. It had a really distinct white camper on the back that they noticed right away, because it didn't really fit. It just wasn't the right size. Again, the Alma PD wastes no time, and they get this to the public immediately. They actually release two different composite sketches based off what these kids told them. And, of course, the description of the red truck. While massive searches for Morgan were being conducted, investigative teams got to work interviewing as many people as they could and sifting through the leads that were beginning to pour in. And this is a case with a lot of leads, so stick with me. Investigators are made aware of an attempted abduction at a laundromat around the same time as Morgan went missing. A man matching the description of Morgan's possible abductor pulled a 4-year-old girl into his truck with a white camper at the Alma laundromat. Now, thank God this girl's mom ended up seeing her and getting her back. But after speaking with the girl's mom, they create a new sketch, a third sketch if you're keeping count. This is released to the public on June 13th, just 3 days after the first two came out. The next day, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children begin running TV commercials featuring Morgan. Utilizing the media was a major strategy for these investigators. They wanted to get information about Morgan, these sketches, and especially information about this red truck out to the public as much as they could. They wanted everyone to be on the lookout for what they believed was an older red Ford pickup, specifically noting the white camper shell didn't quite fit, creating a gap between the cab and the camper, which is why I will keep repeating it to you in this episode. Now, at this point, while investigators are utilizing the media to the best of their ability, they know they can't do it on their own. I mean, they could, but they know it'll be much more effective if someone from Morgan's family participates too. But this just wasn't Colleen or Morgan's father John's focus. Before we even go there, by all accounts, both of Morgan's parents are 100% cooperative. And as far as I could find, investigators have never suspected that either of them was involved in any way. They just don't want to do media, and I don't blame them. Dealing with a situation like this is impossible enough to go through privately, but doing it in front of the world makes it just that much harder. But Colleen and John do it for Morgan, and they soon discover how powerful the media can be, along with the downsides they initially feared. While the media focuses on Morgan's mom, Colleen, John is kind of pushed to the side. In one press conference, John began speaking, and was quickly told by a reporter that they were there to hear from the mother, not from him. And John responds in a very human way, and honestly more patient than I may have been. He basically says, fine, I didn't want to talk to you either. So Colleen really takes over most of the media at this point, which again makes sense and is so normal today. In so many of the cases I cover, I speak with families that have one person that does media. Either this person is kind of chosen by elimination, like in my case, no one else wants to do it, or that person is chosen because they are either perceived best by the media or just the most well-spoken. Of course, I have to put my big disclaimer in here that all cases are different. But this is 1995, and there weren't really conversations about ethical true crime coverage. So they go after John, and the public eats it up. While he's still there at many press conferences and events for Morgan, and is actively participating in her investigation, he's slammed as being cold, or less caring. This is something I found in even recent discussions about John. Which I just want to remind everyone out there that doing things behind the scenes and in front of the world are two very different things. And honestly, different skills. It's really hard to equate these experiences to things that people might relate to. But the only way I can really think about it is like this. I'm sure a lot of you experienced the confidence that came with, like, creating a really great school project. But then when you're asked to present that project, you're terrified. So imagine that, like, times a million. That's the expectation the media had of both John and Colleen Nick. Basically to be the perfect grieving parents for the camera, against all odds and reason. Now, like I said, the public really did seem to feel for Colleen. But in my opinion, they were pretty judgmental of John. So much so that the police decided to make a statement that John cared about Morgan very much and was fully cooperative. Now, the reason I'm bringing it up isn't to be on my soapbox. It's because this was a distraction. Investigators were already looking into and keeping a close eye on Morgan's parents. They didn't need the public's help there. They needed them to be on the lookout for the tall man in the red truck. Luckily, after some time, Morgan's case got enough attention that the message came through. And really, the entire town, state, and neighboring states became obsessed with spotting the old red Ford pickup truck with the white camper. In the days after Morgan went missing, the media really picks up around her case. Leads are pouring in, massive searches are being conducted, and it feels like the whole world is on the lookout for the red truck believed to be involved in her disappearance. One man in a red truck is pulled over and arrested on suspicion of being involved, only to be released. Another man in a red truck gets pulled over so many times that he writes on the back of it in shoe polish that he wasn't involved. They also have troopers at every campground in Arkansas on the lookout for this truck. Investigators also collect information from everyone they can who attended the game that night. They ask everyone for information about the vehicle they drove, as well as the information about any other vehicles any guests may have been driving. And pretty soon, they find an image of a red truck on home video. Now, we are talking 1995 home video quality, so it's rough. But it's definitely a red truck with something white in the back. Some say it looks like a camper. Others say it could be like a white door with windows, or maybe just a window in the bed of the truck. But not long after this discovery, the media announces that the truck is red, but it's a Mazda, and belongs to a parent of one of the kids at the game who's been cleared. But it wasn't long before a major tip came in. Just a few weeks after Morgan goes missing, at the end of June, a man named Albert Harvey says he thinks he may have seen the man and Morgan. This is what he says happened. It was just a normal Saturday afternoon at his job as a gardener, when he saw a man matching the description of Morgan's possible abductor try to break into his truck. And he notices that the man had a small blonde girl with him. When the man saw Harvey notice him, he grabs the girl by the wrist and runs to a nearby thicket. From here, Harvey calls the police. And this sparks a huge 16-hour search for Morgan. There were people on foot, dogs, people on horses, four-wheelers. They brought in a helicopter. And they came up with nothing. They don't see a man matching the description or a blonde girl or Morgan anywhere. But of course, just because the search didn't produce the results they were looking for, the police still want to dig into this. If that was Morgan, this could be huge. So they ask Harvey to come down to the station for a polygraph test. And he fails. Then the truth comes out. Harvey admits that while he did see someone trying to get into his truck, he didn't see a little blonde girl with him. Harvey says that after a coworker told him about Morgan's disappearance, he may have gotten a little carried away. In fact, that's exactly what he told the police. Quote, "I had got a little bit too carried away. I'm sorry, y'all, to cause all this confusion." End quote. Okay, so normally I really try not to take you guys down these paths that I know don't lead anywhere. But I really do think it's important to discuss things like this. Because these things do happen, and more often than you might think. Now, sometimes it's malicious, sometimes it's innocent, Sometimes people just want to be a part of a true crime case. And sometimes they just lie, for whatever reason. Now, they did threaten to charge Harvey with filing a false police report and interfering with government operations, but I couldn't find if they followed through on that. Honestly, selfishly, maybe this is coming from a place of spite from where I'm at in my life, I hope they did. There's just no excuse for this behavior. Because not only is it a huge waste of time, money, and resources that could have been used effectively for Morgan, or maybe another case, but this was, of course, devastating to Morgan's family. For days, they sat thinking that this could be it. Colleen described how she felt. Quote, "He took her away from us all over again." End quote. I honestly can think a few things more cruel to do to a family with a missing loved one than something like this. At this point, Morgan's mother, Colleen, refused to leave Alma. From what I could find, it seems like she slept at the fire station near the ball field where Morgan went missing. Remember, she was only 30 minutes from her home, but for her, that was too far. Her life was looking for Morgan at this point. I just can't even imagine how devastating this was for her and the whole family. But before long, there was another major lead, a real one. On August 30th, an 11-year-old girl is eating at a Sonic fast food restaurant in Alma with her two younger brothers when a man pulls up in a red pickup truck, no camper shell. He eventually lures all three kids into an alley and then offers the 11-year-old girl money to get in his truck and come home with him, and she runs to a Sonic employee and asks them to call the police. Luckily, they are able to identify the truck and the driver as 70-year-old Billy Jack Lynx. He was born and raised in Crawford County, Arkansas. He was a veteran and worked for an airline in Dallas for about 10 years before coming back to Arkansas permanently. When investigators run a background check on him, they discover this wasn't the first time Lynx had done something like this. He was actually placed on a suspended sentence for sexual abuse of a young girl just 3 years prior in 1992. So at this point, it's his second known incident. They arrest Lynx and impound his truck. But investigators do not confirm whether this was the same truck that may have been involved with Morgan's disappearance, and they don't charge him for any crime related to Morgan. But this is all really helpful. By now, a few months after Morgan's disappearance, after speaking to hundreds of witnesses, investigators have been able to put together a timeline for the red truck and suspected perpetrator on the day Morgan went missing. Or at least they believe it's the same red truck and man. If not, I have to say it would be one hell of a coincidence. So here's what they gathered. Starting in the morning, Morgan went missing. They believe this person was involved in the incident involving an attempted abduction of a 4-year-old girl at the laundromat I already told you about. Later that day, a teenage girl says a man in a red truck pulled up beside her while she was walking down the street. He offers her a ride to the downtown area, where Morgan went missing from. But this girl says absolutely not. She is not about to get in this man's truck. But he doesn't leave after this. He kind of just lingers. Long enough for her to get scared. So she walks away from him, and he does eventually drive off. Next, and this one has less details, but investigators believe the same man and truck was involved in an incident where a mom basically sees her 5- and 6-year-old girls running, screaming and crying while a red truck with a white camper drives away. The truck and the man were then spotted in the downtown area, basically yelling at some kids playing in the street. As he leaves, he's seen turning down Walnut Street. And Walnut Street goes right to the parking lot where Morgan was last seen. Not only that, investigators say that that truck, or again, one hell of a coincidence if it's a different red truck with a white camper, parked on the street downtown from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. that night. Basically, they track this same man and same truck from that first incident at the laundromat all the way to downtown Alma to the Little League game. And that's where it ends until after the game. The man and the truck are seen at another location. Now, investigators don't want to release the exact location, but we do have some details. That night, after Morgan was reported missing, a group of teenagers were down by a river when they saw a man in a red truck with a white camper. But not only that, they believe they saw the man holding a small child down in the truck. Of course, at the time, they didn't know what to think, but once news about Morgan spread across town, they believed that it could have been Morgan, and they went to the police. Officers went back to this location the very next day, but it was flooded, and as far as I could find, they weren't able to collect any evidence. And you guys, it does not end there. The last connection was the very next day. On Saturday morning, a man in a red truck with a white camper grabbed a 9-year-old girl from a convenience store about 20 minutes away in Fort Smith, Arkansas. And luckily, she broke free of him and ran. They have so much. I mean, to me, this timeline is very telling. But nothing really happens after this. Morgan's case just sits for years. 26 years to be exact, until 2021. That's when the FBI publicly names Billy Jack Links as the first and only person of interest in Morgan Nick's disappearance after they make a stunning discovery in his truck. 26 years after Morgan Nick goes missing, the FBI publicly names Billy Jack Links as a person of interest in her case after testing evidence found in his truck. In the Hulu documentary series, Still Missing Morgan, investigators explain that they kept Billy Jack Link's truck impounded from his 1995 arrest for decades. Now, it was actually sold at auction at some point, but investigators track it down and get it back to run some tests with updated technology. This is what they find in the truck. Blood under the dashboard. Blonde hair under the floor cover. And a blue-green cotton fiber in the mat under the seats and in some metal pieces of the truck. Now, unfortunately, as of this recording, they haven't been able to find enough DNA in the blood or hair to make a match. But they do find something. At the beginning of this episode, I told you about how Morgan quit the track team and joined Girl Scouts instead so she could stay inside and glue stuff. And I also told you that she was wearing her green Girl Scout shirt the night of the game. Well, that blue-green fiber found in the truck was a match to the same shirt Morgan would have been wearing that night. A definitive match. I have to assume that after all these years, this is why they're finally naming Lynx as a person of interest. So what happens next? Well, Lynx died in prison in the year 2000, serving his sentence for sexual indecency with a child. If he was involved with Morgan's disappearance, he's not here to give her family answers now. I know, it's a huge letdown. But Lynx is actually far from the only person theorized to be involved in Morgan's case after all these years. When Colleen hears about Lynx being named as a person of interest, she responds with, quote, "It's not something that alarms our family. Just because for us, this is just another person in a long line of persons of interest," end quote. Like I said, publicly, Lynx has been the only person named. But I'm sure Morgan's family knows more. Over the years, they've heard countless theories. People have accused Morgan's father, John, of being involved, saying that he was associated with people who engage in criminal activity that may have put Morgan at risk. It's been theorized that Morgan's case may have been linked to a serial killer, Charles Ray Vines. And investigators did want to go interview him about Morgan, but he died before they got the chance. Morgan's case is one of those cases where I feel like you can theorize endlessly. But the truth is, we don't know what happened to Morgan Nick. At this time, investigators and Morgan's family say there just isn't enough evidence. Maybe in the future they can retest the evidence, find a way to link evidence back to Billy Jack Lynx or anyone. But one thing is clear. Investigators and Morgan's family do not consider this case to be closed. And they still hold out hope that Morgan could come home someday. In February 2023, Colleen told ABC News, quote, "The possibility is that 2% of missing children do survive. That means until someone can prove that Morgan didn't survive, the possibility remains that she still survived until someone can prove it. My fight is for that small percentage in case Morgan fell into that 2%, for the possibility, the tiny little possibility. As long as that possibility is there, that's my fight to bring." End quote. The investigators in Morgan's case hold out that same hope. They maintain that until they have evidence that Morgan isn't out there alive, they will continue to operate as if she is. Now, I know that we can often be very skeptical in true crime. We hear stats like this and think 2%, there's no hope. But here we are again at the intersection of hope and statistics. To Colleen's point, although the possibility is slim, it's still possible. J.C. Lee Dugard, Elizabeth Smart, Kara Robinson Chamberlain, Gina De Jesus, Amanda Berry, Michelle Knight, Kamaya Mobley, Katie Beers, and there's more. These kids do come home. If Colleen can work for Morgan for almost 30 years and still hold out this hope, I think we can too. Now, after Morgan went missing, Colleen created the Morgan Nick Foundation in 1996. Initially, it was created to help bring Morgan home. Now it helps so many other families in similar situations. They focus on intervention, education, and legislation. Three very important pillars to help keep kids safe. You can learn more at morgannickfoundation.com, and I really encourage you to do so. In addition to the foundation, Morgan's disappearance sparked the state of Arkansas to adopt an Amber Alert system named after Morgan. I talked about this in my episode about Amber Hagerman, the person who the Amber Alert is named after. But it always feels like these kids who are the inspiration for these policies, foundations, and alerts get a little lost in their own stories. There's kind of like this unspoken idea in true crime content creation that covering popular cases like Morgan's or Amber's or Adam Walsh, JonBenet Ramsey, whoever you want to pick, that they're played out. No one wants to hear them anymore. I mean, when my sister's story got, quote, popular, I was told several times that it was just too big for some people to cover, that she didn't need more media exposure, that there was nothing to add. Now, I will say, as a creator, I get it. Everyone has their own style, preferences, and ways of creating their content, and I understand. But as a family member, that hurt a lot. That your person, your daughter, sister, brother, mother, cousin, friend, whoever it might be, being told that people don't want to hear their story, that they don't want to help because they're bored with it. It's a kind of cruelty I have a hard time understanding. I will also add that every time I cover a case that has gotten a lot of media attention, like Maura Murray, for example, I always get at least one comment or message or email that says I have never heard of this case. And the fact is, Morgan's family is still waiting for answers. Morgan is waiting for justice. Which brings me right to our call to action. Morgan's family and these investigators are still working her case. As of the year I record this episode, 2023, almost 30 years later, they are still asking people to share, to correct the narrative. For example, they want people to know that that red truck in that home video, the one that the local news says was cleared and belonged to a parent at the ball field, was not. There's nothing in their documents to say that the truck in that image is not the truck that took Morgan. They want to shift the public focus away from those early sketches and back to the red truck. So I will have the image of the red truck on our social media channels and website for easy sharing. Just because Morgan's case is popular, maybe you've heard it before, maybe you are bored with it, that doesn't mean Morgan, a 6-year-old little girl, doesn't deserve answers or justice or your shares. As a reminder, Morgan Nick was 6 years old when she went missing from Alma, Arkansas on June 9th, 1995. Morgan is white, with blonde hair and blue eyes. When she went missing, she was approximately 4 feet tall and weighed 55 pounds. As of recording this episode, she would now be 34 years old. Anyone with information about the disappearance of Morgan Nick is asked to call the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children at 1-800-THE-LOST or 1-800-843-5678. But as always, thank you, I love you, and I'll talk to you next time. Voices for Justice is hosted and produced by me, Sarah Turney, and is a Voices for Justice Media original. If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and totally free way for you to help us and help more people find these cases in need of justice.